Hello? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yes, good. Now I can. Ashley just dropped a book on my head. She dropped The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's the ultimate
tome
of multiple books. So it's basically a very thick volume, paperback, luckily, but it definitely landed on my head and knocked my glasses off as I was joining the Skype. Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from nearly half a century of combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks and Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group. Listen live and join us in the chat at commandcontrolpower.com on the first Tuesday of every month. We also offer a weekly email newsletter, which includes show notes for each episode. Learn more at commandcontrolpower.com. And thanks for listening.
It's the dead of summer. We're actually recording this on August 7th. You probably won't hear this till the end of August. We've all been getting work in steady dribs and drabs, but nothing exciting. I had a client, it was a residential client, ran out to his place, did some work, ended up being pretty profitable because I spent at least, 3 to 4 hours. We upgraded his computer, but then his Sonos fell off the network, so I had to reconnect those. And the last thing that was kind of dogging me was this printer. Finally got it to work. I left, and the guy paid me right away. You know, we did a credit card thing, and I left, and I thought it was pretty cool. And then I get back to the office, and like a couple hours later, the phone rings, and he says his printer's spitting out one page that's good, and then the rest of the pages are garbage. So I said, well, you know, we connected that via Wi-Fi. Sometimes the Wi-Fi in these printers are a little shoddy. Do you have a USB printer cable? And he didn't. And we went through a whole scenario where he's looking through the box. He's like, hold on, I might have it here. Describing me the ends. And I'm like already ripping the hair out of my head. Just sit tight. I'm going to come back. It was a 40-minute drive. And I'm like, you know, because, well, there's no escaping this, right? Basically, you came and you did the work, and then my printer doesn't work. So I went out there. I mean, the printer was just, you know, I forget what it was, an Epson or something, just a piece of garbage. And looked for a firmware update, did this, did that, tried connecting it to an airport that I put in bridge mode, used a printer cable and plugged it in through the USB. And those usually work, you know, when you have it directly connected. And we tried directly connecting it to the Mac, and it was still doing this weird thing where like one page would be good and the rest of the pages would be blank. And I'm like, I have no idea what we're going to do here. The very last thing I did was I reset the printer back to factory default, right? Makes sense, right? Just reset all the printer defaults. Sure. It started to work again and print normally. So I said to the guy, if this happens again, this really means that your printer is starting to fail and this is something really outside the scope. You know, this has nothing to do with the Mac or the... He said, well, you know, I appreciate you coming out here. I know when you do something like this, it's warranty work and I appreciate it. I went, huh. I did exactly what you guys did. And but I didn't say anything. And I went like, shook his hand, said, thank you very much. And I hit the car. And, you know, it's starting to eat away at me as I'm driving back to the office. Like, warranty work. But, you know, sometimes, you know, that's the thing that we talk about a lot of times is that the clients can't, they don't understand where the scope of what you do starts and where it ends. Because I tested the printer initially before I ever had to come back where he told me it stopped working. And it was legitimate. I mean, it was a legitimate complaint. But I figured, you know, at that point, you know, is that warranty work or is that an extra charge? And of course, I didn't charge him for it. The client's perspective, especially a residential client, is very, very different a lot of times than what we consider as consultants to be where the work starts and where the work stops. Discuss amongst yourselves.
I would say part of it, Jerry, seems like the idea that he's like trying to set your expectations. You know, he's kind of, well, thank you for this warranty work, you know, and you're like, can't set my expectations. I want to set your expectations. Like, you know, like this printer isn't worth the money you paid for. It was probably free with your last computer or whatever.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you're like, you know, now I'm on the hook to do like warranty work as a follow up. you don't really want the client to tell you what's supposed to be follow-up and rework and warranty work. You're sort of in a better position to determine that, although it may seem like unfair from the client perspective that, you know, you may have a bias toward, well, you know, listen, a lot of things have changed between then and now. And, you know, maybe your incentive is to try to make it seem like it's not related or something. But I think we're all pretty fair, and that's why they work with us. And I'm totally willing to admit when something was, you know, yeah, you know, we didn't get it right the first time, you know, and we'll do it as a follow up. But when they're trying to tell you that it's a warranty work follow up kind of situation, that's where my, you know, full charge mode comes out, you know.
I took it with a grain of salt. I think it was meant in a good-hearted way. The worst thing you can do is, especially when it's a one-off. Now, I had seen this client before, you know, maybe several years ago. When we've talked about this on the show, where the worst thing you could do is get some the hackles of some residential client up. They're posting wildly on Yelp about your performance because they don't understand. So a lot of times, you know, you have to go above and beyond just to make things right. You know, this was one of those deals where my second visit, I spent well over an hour just wrestling with this printer, trying different ways to just make it print correctly. I mean, that comes with the territory. Duly noted that the client always has a different perspective on what is encompassing the total scope of your work.
Where you live, Jerry, also is you have a lot of distances to go for some of your clients, right? It's not like just a hop down the block for you. So to do a follow-up free of charge is a big 2-hour chunk out of your day at times, right?
It can be. In this case, it was. Yeah. But the thing that eats away at me is he may not have said this, but sometimes a client will say, well, you know, when you get around to it. And I'm like one of those people like, no, you know, we got to make things right now, put this job to bed and move forward, because you don't want those little dangling out there. And somehow you get busy, you forget, and all of a sudden they're very angry at you because you haven't given them the time and attention. But you're right, Sam. It does involve a lot more distance for me sometimes to go back and do something for free.
Yeah, that's a good point that you bring up, Sam. The distance part is, I think, a major factor in like what you're willing to, you know, consider a follow-up. If you know it's going to take you 5 minutes, but it's going to entail an hour or an hour and a half of driving both there and back, that's a big difference. In the case of residential, because people are spread out, because they have these little cheap printer issues and things like that where you have to go on site to deal with it, that's why residential, I think, gets a bad name. I think there's also an aspect to it where, like you're saying, Jerry, there's a psychological component where, you know, I feel the same way when somebody says, you know, it's still not right, but it's fine for now, and I'll just let you know. And, you know, it's like you'll feel like it's unfinished, and I don't like to leave it in that state either. Or if they say it's not working, but like just when you get some free time, like I don't really work that way. I'm not going to sit around and like wait till I get free time, you know?
Exactly.
Although, I do have to say it has changed a little bit for me that, you know, that part of the equation, having a system like I have now and having a staff and an infrastructure, because I'm much more comfortable letting it just hang out there, like putting it, you know, in my ticketing system and scheduling it with a due date in the future and knowing that I or someone else on my team will get around to it when it's sort of like slotted back into our calendar. Specifically, namely, Judy will handle that. So she'll, you know, she'll see those tickets still needing to be addressed and she'll schedule time for it. She'll find when that client's available. She'll make it convenient for both sides and get it done. And so there's a major benefit to that, being able to just kind of like forget about it from my perspective. Like I just know that it's handled in the system and I don't need to be aware of it or thinking about it. So that was a big change for me, coming from one man operation where I knew I had to kind of have some mental bandwidth for these different things that just hang out there, versus now having a system and a team where I don't need to devote as much of my like awareness to those things. I trust the system finally to bubble those things up when time allows and when convenient. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle of that. I like to take care of it and just get it done and not have to worry about it, but I also can trust in the system to, you know, bubble that back up when the time is right.
What's your infrastructure like, Sam, for handling those little items that come across your desk where the client's saying, well, you know, when you're in the area again, you know, if you could do a little follow-up, how do you chase those down?
I suppose all three of us work in a very similar fashion. It might be somewhat passive aggressive at times when they say something like that. They're putting it on you to say, how much of a priority do you think it is if I say when you get around to it? It depends on the client. With me and the ticketing system as well, like I'll use Zendesk and throw it in there. And oftentimes I'll just hope that one of my guys picks it up instead of me having to deal with it. Part of what's happened to me is I use the tickets, because everything comes in that way now, as like a buffer. So if I ignore it, someone else will grab it. And because I feel like I'm busy with other things, I really hope that my staff is doing it. And then, you know, we have our meetings where we make sure that that's happening. I feel like I kind of ignore more than I should these days, if that makes sense.
It's a great feature, I think, of having that kind of infrastructure and team and system in place to deal with things, is that it is a buffer. And that's really the intended use. That's the way it really should be used, is as a buffer to help prioritize things. And ideally, you know, you have somebody else helping with the prioritization. People on your staff can pick up things that are like the lower hanging fruit that they're perfectly capable of handling. And it takes a little bit off your shoulders. And ideally, like, the ticket comes and goes and you're not even necessarily aware of it, you know, in a lot of those cases. Or, you know, you remember kicking it down the road a little bit. And then when you next think of it, you look in your system and you see the ticket's been closed. Like, that's awesome. That's the system working as designed, right?
Mm-hmm. I'll see some of those where I know it's going to be me. You know, I'll see it and I'll go, okay, that's something that probably I can handle best, and I'll scoop it up. Other than that, I try and let most things lie and make sure that the team does what they're supposed to be doing.
And how much of that, Sam, does daylight come into play when you're trying to chase down work that's hanging out there? Is it all relegated to Zendesk, or does daylight somehow pick up some of that?
I do try and put things in the opportunities section in daylight to try and see that works as designed, because I think that's a pretty cool feature of daylight. I don't use it all the time, so I'm trying to get better at it. But where I find daylight is awesome is the tasks that I can delegate. I love that. You know, like, I can put in a task because I tell someone they should be doing something. They're like, okay, yeah. And I notice they don't write something down or they don't take note of it. So I'm like, okay, I'll put in a task and I'll assign it to you. There you go. Some of those features are really handy. I find myself mostly using Zendesk to just assign tickets and make sure they go where they're supposed to go. But you're a big daylight guy too, right? I mean, like, how do you use it best?
I live and die by that calendar in daylight, because it's my own calendar and it's dedicated to the business. It doesn't conflict with any family dates. Nothing enters onto that calendar except the business. And for me, I almost use that calendar, because I'm an army of one, like my ticketing system. So tasks that I need to do, things that I need to call my attention to, sometimes I'll color code them in some way so that they stand out and they pop on the calendar. What I find, I like Zendesk, I do use it, recognize the ticketing system, but for me, the tickets start to build up. And especially with Watchmen generating tickets, I think that's great and it puts stuff on my radar screen. But I've mentioned this before, I like to declare ticket bankruptcy on Zendesk. So I just blow out all the tickets. I just say solved. So I don't use too much of the Zendesk ticketing system to tackle jobs that are outside of what notifications I get from Watchmen. Anything that I need to do that's work oriented, it just goes on the calendar. That's my single pane of glass that I need to visualize to see what I need to do and what I need to catch up on.
I feel like it's very beneficial in my mind to see a ticket closed, whereas I can always see a calendar item and it's always there. I love closing a ticket. It's like the best feeling in the world. You don't get that same feeling out of it, I suppose. You're satisfied that you've met the calendar date and it kind of moves on. But I think there's something mentally that occurs in my brain when I see something actually close and marked as complete.
It's a dopamine hit.
Yeah, it is.
I think if there were more of me than just the one, that could work for me. For me, Zendesk is just another place to look. And it is very valuable, because that's where I look to see what indications I'm getting from Watchmen. So it does serve a purpose. And it sometimes brings something top of mind where that wouldn't happen otherwise if I didn't have it in place. But in terms of using those tickets, I mean, sometimes I'll have an ongoing conversation with a client through a Zendesk ticket that's going back and forth, and that's very useful. But I don't look at them as signaling job start, job completion being generated out of Zendesk. It's all through the daylight calendar. And it could be any calendar for somebody. It could be Fantastical. It doesn't have to be daylight. Daylight is here for me, and it's worked, and that's what I'm using.
Daylight. I tried to get started with it. I never really onboarded it, and I haven't ever used it in earnest in our company. But we do have the single pane of glass kind of experience now in Repair Shopper, which is actually kind of a combination of what you guys are describing, you know, the partially being the calendar, partially being the ticketing system, partially being the CRM aspect, although it's a little bit of a jack of all trades and master of none, I would say. You know, you really have to spend the time to kind of set it up and tune it for your own purposes, which I think is also the case with Daylight, of course. But there's a couple little sticking points where it's not super easy to use. Like to create a calendar appointment, you've got to kind of go in and click a bunch of buttons and like drag sliders and things like that. It doesn't make sense. You know, I just want to like drag it on my calendar and have it update in the app. And for some reason that doesn't work and whatnot. But in any case, it does give me the features you're describing, where I can take a Watchman alert that shows up as an alert, as an RMM alert in Repair Shopper. I can then create a ticket from it, or I can just deal with it separately. But, you know, if it is an outstanding issue that I'm going to address, I'll create a ticket from that alert. That ticket is assigned to a customer. Then we take that ticket and we associate a calendar appointment with it. So it's kind of all, you know, all integrated into one place. And it probably sounds better than it is, to be honest, because it's not quite the interface isn't as nice as I'd like it to look. And it's, like I said, a little bit of friction in each step, but it does give you the benefit of having everything integrated. You know, Sam, I do agree, like closing a ticket, I think there's a really nice benefit to that. Probably there's like a dopamine hit or whatever's happening that, you know, causes you to want to actually like close a ticket. Isn't it also great, though, to like assign billable charges to it? I mean, that's the other aspect where, you know, every time I go in there to close a ticket, I'm like, the gears start turning and I'm thinking, how much time did I spend on this? How much time is billable? You know, that's where the rubber meets the road as far as like the actual like success of your company. So it's kind of a nice ability to take a calendar appointment, write the notes on the ticket, and then close the ticket while adding the charges. Like that completes the task. And it's a really nice function of the system.
I just recently had a client that took out like a 25-hour block of time to do some work to create videos and PDFs and stuff like that for kind of like an e-learning site. We went way beyond what they thought they might spend in terms of time. And I know people will kill me for saying stuff like this, but sometimes I just get this feeling of like, man, I feel so bad billing this many hours. And I felt guilty about it, even though this is a big enough company to afford it. It just took a lot longer than they expected, even though I kind of said, hey, this might go far beyond what you kind of originally planned for. Instead of like 25 hours, we were at like 60 something hours for the kind of work that it was needed. It was a lot of dictation to create the PDFs. And so it took a lot of time to get it done. You know, I felt a bit bad about the amount of extra time that it took, even though I kind of prefaced this, the original job with this, but I still said, you know what? I'm not going to take off any hours. The time is the time. That's what it took us. Can't feel bad about it, but I'm trying not to at least. Do you ever get that feeling like you just personally like just feel guilty about charging so much for a particular thing? Or are you guys just like, screw them, that's what it costs?
For me, it's usually small potatoes. I might be inclined to take a quarter hour off of like a hour and a half job. And then I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, you know, this is like going to slowly sink my company. Like I'll just stick to the hour and a half charge, you know, but yeah, 60 something versus 25. If you set their expectation accordingly and you were warning them up front, either like you're thinking, well, this could really go way outside the bounds, or like, it's very hard to predict how much time, or hey, it's going to be what it is. You know, it's going to take as long as it takes. However you set those expectations, I think it's totally fair to say this is the final charge. They shouldn't be surprised along the way if they're seeing the time that's going into it. You're keeping them posted. It shouldn't really be a shock to them. But I do agree that there's a certain aspect of me where I'd be thinking to myself, I'm doing all these calculations that probably I don't really need to do. But it's like, what is the value to this customer? Like, you know, of providing this solution to them? Like, are these things you're providing to them, are they going to be selling it and it's going to be a profit center for them? In that case, you know, I can justify it. I can feel less bad about it. You know, is it the kind of thing where they got into a really bad situation by no fault of their own? You know, they did everything right according to your recommendations and still fell into some kind of, you know, trap. And now it's going to cost them a bunch to get them out of it, just back to status quo. And you're kind of like, oh, man, you know, that could like really devastate their business. Do they have a particularly small budget? And, you know, this is really going to make or break them. I mean, these are all the kinds of questions I have in my mind when I'm thinking about sending that invoice. And to some extent, I think it's a really good feature to be able to just to put all that aside and say, you know, my time is my time. And just I can't get bogged down in running their business for them, you know.
We weren't in constant communication about things. And it is what it is. I mean, they're accepting the billing and it's not turning into a big thing. they are asking for details about the invoicing, which I said, you know, you can get from our online in a database. It just is my always constant internal conflict, which is so stupid in a way, because it's like, this is what I work for. I work to make money and I work to bill my clients for the work that I do. And yet sometimes I have this ridiculously guilty feeling about the amount of charges because it was well beyond what they may have considered originally. But even after doing this for 20 years or so, I'm still at that point. I've gotten better at just saying, feel like maybe weird about it, but screw it. This is the bill. That's it. I'm not even shaving a half an hour off of it.
I think it speaks to your quality as a businessman, Sam. And I think if we all didn't have sharp pencils and we all didn't think twice before sending out our invoice, we may not be in business now. You're entirely justified in feeling somewhat hesitant in putting that number out there, which was obviously a real number for you. Jobs, which I do single-handedly, I'm in those quandaries, but it's to a much lesser degree. So sometimes, you know, I'm, let's say, a semi-pro photographer's house, and they wanted some sort of a major upgrade, and we're looking at a $1,200, $1,400 bill, and sometimes I might shave a little bit off of that. But, you know, I look at those numbers as well. They've basically coasted along with their setup the way it was for years and years, and, you know, the day of reckoning is here, and, you know, now you've got to go to High Sierra. This is what it's going to take for you to get there. So, you know, sometimes it's justified for them to pay up. It all depends on the client, but you're not running a charity organization. You're not there to give other clients a break. So, you know, you've got to take care of your business. I mean, but I think it's good to have conscience and have a sharp pencil and, you know, think twice before the bill goes out in the email.
This is a great conversation, Jerry. I love the idea of a day of reckoning. Put off this maintenance for so long, they shouldn't really be surprised that it's going to cost them. I've used that same logic with clients where they're like shocked because I hear from them after like 3 years of just crickets on their side. Things are a little slow and it's like, well, you've got a hard drive, you've got to upgrade to an SSD, you're two or three operating system versions behind. That's going to take time to get you current. All these things. And then you write up the estimate and it's like many hours and cost them, you know, multiple $100s. They're thinking like, what? Well, I could just buy a new computer. That classic, you know, whole thing. If you had been on our subscription service and, you know, better maintained on a regular basis, you would have been paying basically the same thing over time. You know, you would have had a better experience all along. You basically, you know, kept kicking the can down the road. And finally, all of this stuff, you know, needs to be done all at once. And so, you know, there's the bill to account for that. That helps me justify it because I have the same instinct of, is this reasonable? Like, does this make sense? I agree with you that it's good to have that instinct and it's good to, before you send a bill, you know, without thinking about it, you really should kind of consider it and say, like, am I doing right by the client? But where I get, I think, myself into trouble is where I try to make it even all the time. Like, I try to make sure that I'm, you know, not sending those large bills only to the particularly wealthy clients or something. You know, I try to like almost counteract that, and, you know, maybe I overcompensate for that and I knock off that extra half hour just for no good reason. I'm just taking time off out of my own pocket because I think, you know, well, you know, maybe I would do somebody else a favor, so I should do this person a favor. And I'm just doing everybody favors. And it's like, why? That time was the time that it took. It shouldn't enter into the equation that the person can afford it. But the bottom line is, like, that's the time that it took and that's the deal. And they know it. So the full invoice should probably stand a lot more than it does in my case. And it sounds like for you, you guys can relate to that, too.
Like you said, you have those clients that are kicking the can down the road. We have two new prospective clients on the line. And, you know, you send them your schedule of fees for managed service, and then there's radio silence, and then they have some other crises, and you come in there and you charge them the full billable hourly rate, and they happily pay it, and you just proceed like that. And there's some people, that's the way they deal with their technical support, is emergency flat tire fixer, you know, and you're paying a premium for me to come in and fix your flat tire, but that's the way you want to run your business. They're not willing to pay you any kind of an ongoing rate, a reduced rate a lot of times with our managed service offerings. You know, we're offering a significant discount as long as they pre-purchase ours. That means nothing to them. Carol's iMac just blew up. We need you to hear. You know, it takes them 6 hours. They're paying the full rate. They happily pay the bill. You know, there's just people that run their business that way.
Yeah. The happy part is interesting. Like, if they are happy to pay the bill, start to wonder, well, you know, why, what do I care then? You know, but the fact is that it does put an extra burden on you as the consultant to be there when they call it in crisis mode. And you're also working under duress in those cases. And it's also kind of harder to do your job, both for those reasons, but also because it's just harder to maintain it all at once, as opposed to maintaining it a little bit as you go. It's why we charge those premium rates in those circumstances. But some consultants actually draw the line before that point where they're like, you know what, we don't work that way. We don't work in crisis mode at full rate. You're either with us or you're against us. You know, you're either on board, signed up and paying our monthly rate, or call the next guy in the consultant's locator.
Yeah, but sometimes the world doesn't spin that way, and you got to still put bread on the table and feed your family. It's one thing to say, look, this is our hourly rate. We're available today if you are indeed available. If you're not available and you've got all your guys and gals out on the road and you can't do it, that's one thing. And then there may be a premium involved. But if you got the available time, I think there's nothing wrong with being able to go in there and think on your feet and be able to get them out of a bind. And like you say, there are other consultants who say, look, you know, we'll help you out, but before we do that, let's have a sit down. You need to sign on to our plan. Sometimes clients don't respond to that very well, especially if they're in a real crunch.
Well, they feel like they're getting, you know,
extorted.
Extorted. Exactly. You know, and the other angle is we have a minimum of whatever, X number of hours or a day, something like that. That's another model that can work for other consultants. But I'm with you. I mean, my business model still supports the ability to help in crisis mode or just respond to the one-off kind of client calls. And so that's pretty much our bread and butter in a lot of ways. So I'm not against that. Just playing devil's advocate as far as like what some people choose to do. And I can see the benefit of transforming my business model where I help a limited number of clients who I all know by name. We help them in a very specific way. We have a recipe for ensuring their success and everybody stays up to date, both software wise and hardware wise. And you go down the list and you just make sure that they're totally maintained. And you just simply refuse the others until you need to bring on a new client to balance the books. You basically just operate status quo and you don't have to respond in crisis mode. I see like the benefit of that. To me, it seems like a pretty long way to get from here, you know, where I started my business organically to there, you know, where I'm just turning people away right and left. So it's interesting if you can do it, if you can make that work. But it's, I think, a much more rare kind of business model.
How about you, Sam? Do you find that you will respond to the person who just calls you out of the blue and says, look, hey, we're in a jam. We know you're really good with servers. We read this on your website. Can you come in here because our server won't start? Are you ready and willing to send a guy out there and have at it?
Ready, willing, and able. I don't shy away from those either. Well, first of all, you can charge a higher rate for the hourly because we give the discount for MSP or contracts and stuff. So that's a plus for us because it's more bang for the buck. But also, it sometimes turns into something, or they know somebody else, or you know, whatever. They say something good about you online. So I don't turn those away because we have the bandwidth for it too. So I'm good with that, man.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's almost a marketing expense in some ways too. I mean, not only is it a profit center because you can charge the higher rate, that's great, but it also can turn into a relationship. And we start a lot of client interactions that way, where we get a call from the Apple store for data recovery and it's a one-off thing, but that client is going to think of us the next time when they want to either buy a new Mac or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's definitely a benefit to being more welcoming than not, to saying yes to more gigs than not. It has its limits too, because you get into these situations where you're working for people that, you know, really don't appreciate the benefit of ongoing maintenance. And so there's kind of a built-in filter there where a lot of those clients are not actually going to see the light when it comes to your MSP model. But if they can, you know, that's definitely a good source of potential. I mean, you can be the hero in that kind of instance, and then they can say, just tell me how to never have this situation happen again, you know, and that's a really good position to be in when you're pitching your service too.
I want to give a shout out to our good friend Adam Angst, who runs the Tidbits Content Network. Time flies so fast. I am in month 4 of sending out a monthly newsletter with the content being based from the information that Adam supplies with his subscription service. It's worked out well. I'm not sending a very large list. It's less than 600 people that it's reaching out to. With the amount of effort that I put in and take what I think are the top 3, because that's all I include in the monthly newsletter, the top 3 articles that I think would interest my clients that Adam supplies, but he supplies a lot more articles. To do a mailing, you know, once you get everything set up, it goes pretty smoothly and it doesn't take a lot of effort. And I would say from that mailing, if I get at least one person that wouldn't normally have contacted me. It certainly pays for my expenses to keep this thing going. So, and I think it's going to start to build over time. But what's really nice about Adam's Tidbits Content Network, he writes great content. He has beautiful photographs. And he could just really make your blog look really sexy. And if you just simply want to populate a newsletter with his articles, it's well worth your time. And it's a very, very modest investment. So we encourage all our listeners to take a look at tcn.tidbits.com. And if you're an Apple ACN, you get a discount for signing up. And it just deserves a mention. I'm using MailChimp to send out my newsletter. And I got a laugh this morning. Inevitably, when I send out the monthly newsletter, I'll get one or two people that will unsubscribe. And that's kind of a normal thing. And you just have to be prepared for that. But somebody I sent it out to today unsubscribed. And their comment was, there's a place for them to comment with MailChimp. You know, like why you want to unsubscribe. And this guy wrote, spammy content. And it just made me laugh out loud.
Ouch. And he actually typed that in, right? Yeah, it's not like one of the populated options there. Wow.
Exactly.
Spammy content. Wow. I just don't even know what to say. I feel like if he emails you with a question, you know, at some point in the future, like
I'll be ready.
You might just mark it as spam. Yeah.
An elephant never forgets, Joe. Let me tell you.
Right.
That reminds me of a story. I had a client who contacted me. We were up for a job and I think they ended up using another consulting company, and it wasn't HCS and it wasn't CIMAC either, by the way. They ended up passing on me providing them support and using somebody else. Years later, this guy calls me back and he said, well, I guess you probably won't remember. And I'm like, oh, yes, I do. Those are the ones you remember.
It's kind of funny that you say that, because we got a call from a very old client, like at least, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, that we haven't spoken with in a long time. Their newest assistant had called us and asked what we do and how we can help. And I'm like, I'm not sure if you're aware, but we worked with the owners of the company many years ago. He's like, oh, no, I know. We're just, you know, reaching back out again. I'm like, oh, okay. But in my head, I'm remembering the last interaction we had with them was one of the owners had backed into my partner's car and smashed the side of the car. So we have a very, not the fondest of memories at the end of our time with them, but it just made me laugh when I thought about it.
And that's pretty funny you bring this up, because I think you mentioned to me through chat, this client we had worked with also in the past. They notoriously, you know, don't take any recommendations. And we're talking like really basic stuff. You know, hey, guess what? All of your Macs on your whole corporate network, no, none of them are backed up. And this is really not good. You start with just like the very basics. And then you get like more heavy handed, to the point where I got to the point where I'm basically like, we can't really support you guys if you don't do anything we say. If you won't back up your Macs, that's kind of a non-starter for us at this point. You know, and it's funny, you had a similar stop and start scenario with them. And they've done the same thing, where we've had cases where like maybe a year or two went by and we had no contact, and they reach back out and there's like a new person working for them or something. Kind of surveying the field again. And I feel like they're the type of client that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where they really don't see any kind of benefit of any ongoing relationship or maintenance. And they're just crisis mode. Like they're just, you know, they just need something right now. We've had a couple things where they reach out like that and we get back to them and it's been like 2 hours or something. And we're like getting geared up. All right, let's see who's available. Okay, let's see if we can, you know, when he comes back from this appointment, like then he'll be ready. And okay, we call them and we're like, all right, what's going on? And they're like, oh yeah, we solved it. You know, and it's like one of those scenarios.
Of course.
Where, you know, we're getting geared up to like, you know, swoop in or something. It's one of those where we just totally walked. At this point, we feel like we've walked away. I don't remember how we left it, but it's one of those nebulous relationships in general. So yeah, I think we're all in the same boat with that client, actually.
We were talking a little bit earlier in the show about daylight, and that's where daylight can really come into play, especially if you had some interaction that goes back years ago, because they have this integration with the Apple Mail system. So if you do use Apple Mail and you don't use Outlook, it doesn't work with Outlook, you can add the emails to daylight. So frequently I'll get these calls and I'll hear the name of the company and I don't even have to do an email search. I could just simply open up daylight and do the contact search. And there's clients that we mark as like cold clients or non-starters. All of a sudden, boom, you know, you're talking to somebody that hasn't called you in 5 years and you see the last email exchange with you had with them, and it all comes back to you. And it's like so invaluable sometimes.
It comes rushing in. I know that feeling, man. And that's exactly the feeling I got with them. Besides the car being hit, was just dealing with them in general was ridiculous. And I feel like they get their new assistants to call back just to see if they can negotiate a new deal because it's somebody else calling us. And I'm like, forget it. It's not going to happen. I don't wish ill upon people, but they almost need to lose their data once for them to realize something, you know? And unfortunately, these people haven't. So they haven't seen the value in what we can provide or what a backup can even do. They just think, oh, it's, you know, it's all safe. It's fine. You know, but they need something catastrophic just once, and then maybe, and I don't even know that they will, but maybe they might come around.
Yeah, it all depends on the size of the client too. You know, sometimes, you know, they'll hire some sort of a staff person and they'll bring in some in-house IT. And for a long time, that guy or girl can be the flat tire fixer and help to move things along a little bit. But then eventually, you know, the day of reckoning comes where it's just above that person's pay grade. And now they're on the phone, you know, the secretary's calling out like, yeah, we're wondering, like, what's your hourly rate? Because, you know, we have some things that we need to have looked at. It frosts me, especially when I've gotten that call before, but it's happened 5 or 6 years ago.
You know, the march of progress, you know, dictates that every time they call you every few years, the rate is usually higher. So they're not really benefiting from, you know, kicking the can down the road again and again.
Have you ever shown up on site, person has, let's say, an iMac, and they decided they were going to get a portable, and they've got 750 gigs worth of data, and they bought a 250 gig MacBook Pro?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So we did one of those recently where I said to the guy, I don't know who advised you, the Apple Store, they do a very good job, but somebody should have asked you what the size of your hard drive is, because there's just no way we can even move forward with what you've got here. This is...
Well, they said I could put it all in the cloud.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, who's going to put it in the cloud, sir? You know, like, how are you going to get it there? Jerry, I've been down that road about a million times. And it's the other one is they bought an iMac and it has a hard drive. You know, I mean, I've been beating this drum for probably 5 years now. By rights, I mean, we should not be allowing our clients to buy a machine with a spinning drive, a rotational hard drive anymore. And I've been saying that for years, and it's still, unfortunately, something that clients can stumble into. You know, I will go down that same road that you're describing where a client says, hey, I got a new Mac. You want to come set it up? You know, and they think it's going to be like, yeah, I'll be right over. You know, and which Mac did you get? Okay, what are the specs? You know, and then sometimes, like you're describing, it can take a couple rounds of back and forth. I'm extremely thorough with this kind of thing, and I will follow that road all the way to the end. There are occasions where you get to the point where you're just like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to do the easy thing and just show up. And then you get into those exact scenarios, and then it costs you time, and then you've got to return the computer, and it's just a whole nightmare. And it's like, unless they have that ongoing relationship, and sometimes even then, it's really hard to help a client avoid that. You don't want to have a blanket statement like, don't ever buy a Mac without calling me. That just sounds weird.
I got one tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock. I have to be there, PC users. And they said that we bought two new iMacs. I didn't have any discussion of what they got. Live by the sword, die by the sword. The only thing I have to make sure that I do, it's a good tip, is you set expectations. If, in fact, it's not even a Fusion drive, it's just a spinning drive in there, depending on the data that they have on the PC, this could take several hours for us to move it per machine. People just go out and they figure, well, I'm going to the Apple Store. How bad could it be? You know, they're going to sell me a new machine. I'm going to get it. And now I'm going to be a Mac guy.
That's the absurd thing about the whole thing is like, you're exactly right. Why is it that you can walk out of the Apple Store today and have a bad experience with your new Mac, your brand new out of the box Mac?
Right. When the Mac's underperforming because it's a spinning hard drive, 5,400 RPM drive, i5 processor, it's some lack of ability on your part. All of a sudden, this is all falling on your shoulders.
It looks like it's on you. You know, why can't you make this? You know, all I know is I walked out of the Mac store. I was happy. You know, everybody was smiling. And, you know, you show up and you're telling me what's wrong in my life. You know,
this is the one they told me to buy. I had a client like just the other day. They sold her a MacBook. So she went from a MacBook Air to a slower MacBook. The client really didn't know the difference, but I could sense the difference. The MacBook Air was faster.
Exactly. How do I plug in my flash drive that I have my pictures on it or whatever? And you're like, oh, you need this adapter. And then, okay, fine. All right. Well, I can deal with an adapter. Well, then now how do I charge it? Well, you know, you can either charge it or you can use this adapter to plug in your flash drive. And, you know, and then so it just seems like a worse experience overall. You know, it's like when you get into the details of the thing, the MacBook is a downgrade from a MacBook Air. You're describing speed wise, maybe even capacity wise, depending on the circumstances of where they're coming from and where they're going. And unfortunately, it's not across the board. No blanket statement you can make can't go wrong if you walk into the Apple store. There are still these details, and it's not even edge cases. It's like if you walk out of there with the stock MacBook or the stock iMac, you know, or even like you described earlier, the stock MacBook Pro base model with minimal storage, it's going to be a worse experience than, you know, maybe you had a 1 terabyte SSD in your 2011 MacBook Pro. Your workflow was more I/O dependent than processor heavy. Everything was working great. You had plenty of space, and now your new computer constantly giving you this warning about being out of capacity. It's nice and fast, but you know, you can't fit anything on it. So it's just more nuanced than the Apple Store, I think, would like to let on. I can understand that. They want to be able to serve the 80 or 90% of customers as easily as possible and have them just walk out of there and pretty much have an okay experience. But it's the people we work with where now we're like coming in after the fact. You know, they're looking at you as like some guy or gal off the street. All they know is they walked out of the Apple Store, which is like the marketing that they know and love. That's what's in the Apple Store. And that's a fun and happy place for them. And then you're coming in and you're dashing all their hopes and dreams by telling them they bought the wrong thing, or right, they don't have what they really need, or, you know. And so, yeah, now you're left to pick up the slack, and it sucks to be in that position. It really does.
You're stinking up the place. If you're going to roll that way, like I'm rolling tomorrow, you just got to show up on site and you got to be ready to say, set the expectation. If you feel like there's friction, you got to be prepared to walk.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, there are plenty of those situations.
If you don't just walk out and let them call the next person in the list, the thing you might have to do is walk out and say, you know, your homework is to go to the Apple Store and return this computer and buy this better computer with these specs. And that's a really tough conversation to have. And it's also not great for you because you're not going to charge them for the hour minimum to go out there, probably, you know, just to deliver bad news. So it's just not a good position to be in. And that's why it's so frustrating from our perspective as consultants versus Apple's corporate position of like, we're not yet ready to just give everybody an SSD as the base model. At some point, the tables are going to turn where the base model iMac, you know, will finally have an SSD, whether it's a 256. I don't see what's stopping them from putting a 256 gig SSD in there at the base model. The only thing that it could possibly be is the marketing, you know, when they're going head to head with the PC desktop. You know, the PC has a, you know, 1 or 2 or more terabytes of storage, you know, and it just looks like that's a big number. Sure. The iMac has 256 gigabytes. It's like, oh, what year is this? You know, that's the storage. See, that's probably the position Apple's in, but unconscionable to have somebody walk out of there with a rotational hard drive in this day and age.
You mean a Fusion drive isn't good enough?
We're now like, quote unquote, upgrading Fusion drives to take out the Apple components and just put in SSDs in those iMacs with the Fusion drive as a way of mitigating like future problems, because they're more prone to failure than just a standard hard drive, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That's why I was asking, because I mean, yeah. Fusion drives, talk about stinking up the place. That's what, when I see a Fusion drive, I'm like, okay, either needs a replacement or we need to upgrade the guts, because I'm not working with a Fusion drive. I've just seen so many bad times with those freaking Fusion drives that I can't take it anymore.
You just start hearing that ticking sound in your head. You know, you're just, this is an accident waiting to happen. Basically, like one bad reboot, one power interruption or failed update where they lose their patience, you know, mid progress bar or whatever. And they're just not very resilient, you know, as a technology, having a combination of two like components, especially one of which that's prone to failure. Like, then you get into the question of, is worth putting in the amount of time? You know, you might write up the proposal, but by the time you open up one of those machines and sell a client an SSD and the adhesive kit and the bracket to install the SSD and all these components, just maybe time to upgrade. And so you start off in this conversation where, you know, I just want to install the latest OS. And then, you know, you end up with, you need a new Mac. Well, this is like 3 years old or 4 years old. Yeah, but it's got a Fusion drive. And from our perspective, it's a ticking time bomb. These are all those hard conversations that we have to have with clients where we're delivering basically bad news all the time.
You know, it's funny, too, because we just had a conversation with a client where – basically wanted to order a computer directly and almost didn't involve us with the question. This is an office, not just a home user. He had quoted a Fusion drive and he's like, hey, we're going to get this delivered. And he sent us the printout from Apple.com and we said, we're not going to set it up. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm not working with the Fusion drive. Well, that's what we're getting. I'm like, I refuse to work on this.
Good for
and
you.
I've known him for a long time, but still, this was trying to keep it semi-professional. Very adamant. He's like, but I'm going to save a couple $100. I'm like, that's just crap. You're going to lose that in our time alone or whatever's going to break down in the future. We eventually broke him down. Okay, you got me. But it took like 10 business days for us to convince him before he would actually do it. It was insane. But that's how strongly I feel against the Fusion drive at this point.
I think we have a new name. It's Refusion drive.
I like that, actually.
I've been in situations where a fresh copy of Office 365 and just running the installer, and it takes minutes and minutes and minutes, and you wonder, what is going on with the Fusion drive? Like, what's happening? And then you try to launch Word for the first time, you know, to log in and authenticate, and it's just bouncing in the dock and bouncing in the dock. And you go like, what the hell is going on? You're thinking this to yourself, and you're at the client site, and you're just lost for words. I mean, just out of your control. It's completely out of your control.
Yeah. It's frustrating as anything, too. I mean, wasn't the idea, and I could be way off base, but wasn't the idea like the system would basically learn what you use more frequently? And am I way off here, guys?
No, that's
and then
it.
Like
that's
and then it. Basically use it off the SSD, right?
Right, right.
But those first launches, I guess, I mean, who knows? It's like, oh, I'll go off the spinning platter and we'll see what happens.
Right. Well, it also used to be that the Fusion drive was like 128 gigs of flash or something, wasn't it? Like or at least it was like it was more flash storage.
Right. Yeah. It was significantly bigger than it is now.
It's a little concession to like modern standards. And like, I mean, I guess the OS can fit in the flash portion, you know, so maybe the startup times are a little bit better, but I'm inclined to say it's like the worst of all worlds. You know, it's like more prone to failure. Like if there's two components, you know, it's more likely to fail than if there's one component that might fail. You know, it's twice as likely to fail in that sense from a hardware standpoint. And you know, so anything like that, it better have a really significant upside, and it just doesn't. So it's clearly like technology that's just on the way out, and it was a concession, you know, whatever it was 5 or 6 years ago when it started, and it's just never, it's gotten worse over time, not better. So mm-hmm.
Right, and they're still selling them, and that's the irony right there.
But it's funny, Sam, you should say that you would actually refuse to work with the Fusion drive. Like you would just flat out say, like, we're not going to set it up. Like you can buy that computer, knock yourself out, but like, we're not going to work with you. And that can sometimes be a really effective technique. I mean, if rightly so, I mean, you're not doing it as a bargaining chip. You're basically saying like, if you don't take my advice, I'm not going to work with you on this job because that's how strongly you feel about it. It just reminds me of like the logic I sometimes have with clients when they talk about, you know, should I look at this Samsung, like the phone? Should I look at these Samsung phones? Before we even get started with this conversation, like you have all Macs, you have iPads and iPhones. No, you should not. You know, this is not a trivial thing you should just consider. But besides all that, and it's the same conversation with like Windows when they're like, you know, should I think about switching to Windows? I mean, do I really need the Mac for anything? Part of the conversation has to do with, I occasionally get this question. The conversation not only is it related to like the whole ecosystem, because you're already kind of like invested in the Apple ecosystem, and there's a lot of reasons why it should stick with it through momentum, and also not to mention there's lots of real benefits to using the Mac. But besides all of that, what supersedes everything sometimes is if you do go down that route, and don't let me stop you, we won't be your consultants anymore. We as a company don't support that. So, you know, I mean, good luck, but like we just won't, you know, we're not going to be here really to support you through that process. And that's sometimes actually enough to convince them. You know, they want to continue the relationship. Like they do want your help. They will actually make their buying decisions based on that.
We are supposed to be their advisors. They should listen to us and pay attention to what we have to say about the subject because we kind of know what we're talking about. But it is sometimes a battle with those people that only see the dollar signs of certain products. And that's a hard thing if they have that mindset, like that's just a personality thing for them, not just computer-wise. Sometimes I find it can be a very hard mindset to change where they see the lower dollar sign and they just can't stay away from it. They can't heed your advice no matter how much you give it to them. So it's a difficulty anywhere, and it takes that relationship to make them understand that you are their technical advisor. On the other side of the coin, not even just buying questions, in the technical advisor role, just to switch it up a little bit, we had a client that was like looking to change website stuff, and their website was slow and all this other stuff. Their web designer said they should do like a virtual server and set it up so that they had their own IP. And they're like, well, why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you know this? And I'm like, first of all, you didn't tell us your website was slow. I don't go checking on it every day. I'm your IT liaison to certain things. Like, I don't have the answers to every single freaking thing. I speak the language that others do, and I have the contacts. So if you ask for my advice, I can help you. But if you're just expecting me to know everything on God's green earth about technical related stuff, well, I can't help you.
Can you provide Revit support? We need Revit support. Can you provide that for us? And I need you to come to the office and convince us to stay on the Macintosh platform.
Right. I'm so glad you're back, Jerry, because I did a terrible job with my voices.
No, your voice was great. That's all that I could hear while you were talking was people who need to be convinced. I tell people sometimes, they're like, I'm going to go to Windows. This is just ridiculous. And I'm like, look, if you want to go to Windows, I'm not a Mac evangelist. I can't convince you to stay on the Mac platform. If you're ready to move forward, I'm happy to help you. Sometimes you just can't have that conversation with them because all of a sudden they just want to joust with somebody. They just want to, you know, verbally joust with you. I don't have time for that, you know?
Yeah.
Right. They've already read all of the reasoning from shady websites about things, and they ask you like which phone they should buy, and you tell them which model, and they're like, I've been reading about the problems on that, and you're like, okay, like I just fell into like a trap, you know, where they're like prepared with all the like reasons why they shouldn't, and it's like, you know, I just don't want to have that conversation.
Are you kidding? Our own family members do that. I've had this conversation most recently. My dad needs a new iMac, right? The one he's got for like 2014 or something like that. And I said, look, you know, you just sit tight, Mark time, and I guess he's having trouble with the graphics card. Geez, what a shock, right? I said, look, just sit tight. Maybe something's going to shake out in the fall. And he's like, yeah, okay. And then I have another conversation with him. He goes, yeah, I was reading that they're going to release new iMacs in the fall. And I said, I don't know what you're reading, but those people are just guessing, just like I would guess. There's indications that this is going to happen, but they don't know any more than I do. And it harkens back to that thing where my dad used to say about this about his wife, where, you know, he would tell her something, you know, something having to do with home improvement. We're back on home improvement again. And she wouldn't believe him. And they would have to go down to Home Depot. And the guy who's getting paid minimum wage at Home Depot would have to tell them, well, this is the way it is. And then she would believe it. You ever been in that situation where they don't believe you, but they're going to believe the minimum wage employee in the store?
Right, exactly. Well, it's the same position you're in when they come from the Apple store, for that matter, you know,
exactly.
And they're armed with all this knowledge of, it used to be they're armed with knowledge of what server can do, you know, and they're like going to go head to head with you about like, why shouldn't I run my business on this, you know, email server or whatever.
Right. But, I just bought this Mac Mini and I want to host my website and I want to run my email. And you've got the problem if you can't provide that to me.
Oh, my God. You go running for the hills on that one.
Exactly. And some of our colleagues are like bemoaning the loss of server, you know, and we're never going to have that conversation again with the client. You know, I welcome the demise of the Apple server product.
How dare you, Joe?
I mean, unless it's a Snow Leopard server, then I'm game.
That's the right answer. Good job.
Nice. Okay. Well, I was going to just say, like, how about I say, I got nothing. And then you leave that part in where I say, how about I say, I got nothing. and then you guys say, you got nothing. And we just kind of go from there.
It's a great start. Yeah. Strong.
Strong start. Yeah, exactly. So this is good. So for the listeners, the idea is that this is going to be a fun show, not good. So that sets your expectations.
Has it started already? This is it.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's the dead of summer.
I don't have the answers to every single freaking thing. I speak the language that others do, and I have the contacts. So if you ask for my advice, I can help you.